Spirit Blade Underground, September 11th, 2009.
Warning, access restricted. Enter password. DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome.
Spirit Blade Underground, September 11th, 2009.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast. I'm Peter France and the creator of Spirit Blade Productions. We're bringing you Christian sci-fi and fantasy that's unsterilized, unsafe, and unleashed on your ears and imagination. You can check out what we're doing and grab lots of cool downloads over at www.spiritblade.net. Speaking of downloads, let's get into updates.
File access. Update.
I am basically finished with the part 5 of the Dark Ritual commentary. I apologize, I've not put it up yet. I've gotten a little bit behind this week, but that is basically in the can and ready to go. I will probably get it up on the site early next week. I'm almost positive there's not going to be a podcast next week. I will be out of town attending BayCon, which is a fun little, it's either a large get-together or a very small convention. I'm not sure. I'll let you know. But some podcaster buddies and a few people that I know online are getting together for this event that I guess has been going for a few years now. If you want info and you want to meet up with me with this group, next Saturday, it'd be the 19th, something like that, whatever the Saturday is next weekend, in Visalia, California, let me know. It's basically open to whoever wants to come. So shoot me an email. I'll get you more information on how you can get there and all that, whatever. But I'd love to connect with you. Let's see, what else? Oh, yeah. It's possible that next week, in place of the podcast, I don't know, don't hold me to this at all, there'll be the first release from the Spirit Blade Underground Alliance, like a short audio drama in somewhere in the sci-fi fantasy horror genre that's being produced by the volunteer community that we launched. I guess it was it last January? I don't know, early spring, I think, of 2009 we launched that group. And some of the projects are coming to a head. I know one that's really close to being done. So my plan right now is to have those stories featured on this same feed and then still have the weekly podcast episode, but on the weeks that I release something from the Spirit Blade Underground Alliance, the podcast would either be shorter or it would be a lower bit rate so that I don't have to upgrade the service that I'm using with Libsyn. Right now there's nothing in the budget for me to pay for a second feed monthly or to upgrade the one that I'm currently using. So that's my plan right now. If you have a solution that you'd like to suggest that will not cost me any more money and will not, where I don't have to share the feed here and I don't have to shorten or lower the audio quality of podcasts when a SBUA project is released, I would love to get your idea. Send it to me, PAETER at spiritblade.net. Or, of course, you can always call me. What is that number? 206-350-1226. Let's see, does that cover all the stuff that I wanted to cover? I think so. Oh, I still want your thoughts on part 6 of our Spirit Blade Dark Ritual interactive commentary. It would be disc 2, track 3, or part 6 if you're looking at the MP3s, titled Conversion Experience. It's where Merrick and Vincent both go through kind of conversion experiences, and it also features the song Necromancy, which is, I think, from what the feedback I get, the song that folks are most enjoying in Dark Ritual. I could be wrong, but if you have thoughts on that part, send them my way. I'd love to include them in the commentary. If you call me at 206-350-1226, I'll actually incorporate your recorded message into the commentary itself. So come and be a part of that. It's been a lot of fun so far. I actually didn't get any comments on the last section, so give this section a listen. See if there's anything you'd like to say or share or ask or whatever, and I'd love for you to be a part of the commentary with me. That's why we call it the interactive audio commentary. So I hope you guys will be a part of that. Let's see, what else did I want to cover? Yeah, like I said, there probably won't be a podcast next week, but my plan is the following week, whether there is a, you know, something on the feed next week or not, the following week to come back with a double feature review. I'm planning on, at this point, reviewing both Pandorum and Surrogates because they come out on the same day. I'm going to try and get them both seen in a 1 or 2 day period and then have them both reviewed on the same show, a double feature review. I'm looking forward to both of those movies a lot. Both of them look cool, and I kind of have my hopes up a little bit, but we'll see what happens. All right, that's it. Today, I've got a review for the movie Nine, and then I'm going to share an interesting experience that I had this week that I hope you guys will enjoy hearing about. So, without any further ado, let's get to it.
Inside Pater's brain.
Well, before we get to the main event of what's on my brain today, I want to share with you guys kind of an update on the Summer of Free. For those of you that sent in your ideas of how to entertain ourselves for free this summer, thank you very much for contributing. After 3 months of saving and scraping, I was finally able to get the HD TV for playing video games in my upstairs office or playroom. And I'm not a graphics snob at all, but many games for the 360 are formatted for widescreen high-def TV. And I was content with my old one. But I discovered if you don't have a high-def TV, it can be really hard to read in-game text for some 360 games. And as an RPG gamer, reading text is vital. And Dragon Age Origins hits the shelves at the beginning of November, along with a few other RPGs that I'm interested in checking out in the future. So getting a high-def TV has been a goal of mine for a while now. Well, I skipped buying a fair chunk of comics and DVDs this summer, along with a number of other money-saving strategies. In the end, I saved close to $100, and that is a lot for me. Folks, money tends to burn a hole in my pocket, so saving $100 over 3 months was a big deal. Add to that some leftover fan and furniture money in our budget that was not spent completely, and a big sale on a display model TV at Best Buy at their Labor Day sale, and I finally hit my goal of getting the TV where I could read the text on 360 RPG. So woohoo! And now back to my regularly scheduled spending. Now, actually, I'll probably scrape and save a little bit more because, like I said, games coming out. But anyway, all right. So what's mainly on my brain today is that I am not basically good. For a number of years now, I've heard it said repeatedly that people are basically good, but I would guess that most police officers do not find themselves agreeing with this philosophy. To be something basically means to be something primarily or fundamentally. Although there are various moral codes that people adhere to, let's assume for just a moment that good means thinking of others first, doing unto others as you'd have them do unto you, being the opposite of selfish, right? That's probably a pretty good, you know, general definition we can all latch onto. Well, I can tell you from personal experience, personal recent experience, that I am definitely not basically good. Recently, I was running an errand out to the other side of the city before coming home to have a date night with my wife. I had already done some running around earlier in the day, so I was over the thrill of it by this point. I felt like singing, and so I took along some CDs and a CD player in the car, and I know, I need to get an iPod, but that's beside the point. Sounds nice so far, right? Oh, a date night with his wife. How sweet. He doesn't sound like such a bad guy. He's probably basically good. I don't know, but that's strange old man or something there. I'm not sure. But anyway, well, in reality, if I were basically good, I would not be fumbling through CDs looking for my favorite at a stoplight. I wouldn't be doing anything that would divide my attention from driving so that I can keep traffic moving well for those behind me and avoid harming anyone by accident. But my momentary pleasure was too important to give those around me any thought. And though I didn't cause any problems for others at the start of my journey, my selfish behavior was only beginning. Closer to my destination, while on a slow, crowded freeway, I noticed that traffic was dramatically slowing between my upcoming exit and the exit I was about to pass on my right. I had already passed the proper exit point and would have to cross illegally to get off at the exit I was about to pass to avoid the upcoming traffic jam. But you know what? I did it anyway. Now, I should say that my wife considers me a very safe driver, and I do too, relatively speaking. I never go more than 6 miles over the speed limit, usually staying at around 4 to 5 above. I signal in parking lots, which my wife thinks is funny, and I often signal in parking lots even when no one is there. I'm not an aggressive driver by any definition. Timid would be a better word. City traffic and dense freeway traffic both make me nervous. 6 months, just to give you an idea, after getting my license at 17 years old, I was stopped by a police officer for not yielding to oncoming traffic. He was the oncoming traffic, by the way. I was turning left at a light, saw the oncoming policeman, and thought he'd be more upset if I wasn't out of the intersection before the light turned red. Well, I was wrong. He left me with a stern warning, and I cried my way home, completely stressed out by the situation. What can I say? I'm one of those sensitive artsy types. I haven't been stopped by a police officer in the 14 years since. Until now. I lost my gold star this week. When I saw him appear behind me, I knew he must have seen what I'd done. I knew I was guilty. I pulled us into a parking lot in response to his inevitable flashing lights. The front of my shirt began to bounce off my chest to the beat of my heart as he walked up to the driver's side window. He told me why he stopped me, and I smiled and nodded sincerely, saying, "Oh, I'm sure." After asking a few routine questions and getting my information, he asked why I'd made the illegal exit. Now, if I were basically good, he wouldn't have received a stuttered answer containing both truth and falsehood. I told him that I had seen the upcoming traffic jam and that since I was following some printed directions, true, I had a little MapQuest printed sheet there, I didn't want to get lost, false, or stuck in traffic, true. Okay, so what's going on? How did that little lie get thrown in there? I'm still not sure as I think about it, but what I believe is that as my mind was racing, there was a split second where I thought presenting a concern over getting lost might benefit me. My natural instinct was not to present truth, which would be good. That would be a showing that I am basically good, if that's my natural instinct. No, my instinct was to protect my personal comfort, something that is naturally, instinctually selfish. Maybe the officer would be a little more sympathetic if he thought I felt lost. Maybe I thought in that split second. I'm still not sure. I also remember shaking very nervously, which was 100% real. But I also made the conscious decision to hold my sheet of directions up from my lap so that he might possibly, I don't know, he might possibly see the paper quivering and possibly sympathize with me a little bit. See, if I were basically good, I would not have given any thought to manipulating the situation for my benefit. My concern would be to relay the truth without hesitation. If I were basically good, remember, fundamentally, primarily good, the truth would just flow out of me unfiltered, and this policeman would not have to use his training to discern truth from lies, as I'm sure he has to do every day. The officer asked me at one point if I had seen the white Acura as I exited. I told him I wasn't too good with car names, which is true. After he clarified, I told him that I honestly didn't remember, which was also true. I thought I remembered a white car passing first before I turned out that would then be ahead of me and out of the way. Then again, I might remember a white car being behind me that seemed far enough away for me to exit safely. I don't know. But after the heart-pounding trauma of being, quote, on the other side of the law and caught, my memory was not serving me very well. Still, even if I was not putting someone else in danger with my actions, and that is a big if, because it's very possible I was at the very least saying that I am special and don't have to follow the rules that all the rest of you do. My agenda and to-do list is more important than yours. Well, these are not the words and actions of someone who is basically good. For a few moments, the officer went back to his car, no doubt to check and see if I had any warrants or other goodies on my record. At this point, I said to God, "God, I could really use some mercy here, but I know you're also a God of justice, and I know I've done wrong here, so I leave this in your hands. Help me to just be okay with what happens." The officer eventually returned with some paperwork and a citation. He very kindly and graciously explained my three options, even making a sympathetic joke about how boring the traffic school class is. The three options were the traffic school class, pay the fine, and then it would, of course, affect your insurance, or contest it in court. And, you know, when he said that last one, I just interrupted him and said, "You know what, don't even bother telling me where my court date is. I'm in. I was wrong. There's no way I'm going to court, you know." He was very sympathetic. He made a sympathetic joke, I should say, about how boring the traffic school class is. He never used a judgmental or scolding tone with me, though he had every right to. He asked if I had been to traffic school in the last 5 years. Now, here we go again. I stumbled a bit on this answer because I had never been to traffic school before. I almost said that, thinking I might win brownie points in some way. I'm not sure why. I thought that would help at this point, but I was still instinctively doing anything to reduce my punishment. But then the thought flashed into my head that maybe I'm supposed to take some kind of traffic school class every few years all this time, and I didn't know about it. And telling him I had never done so would get me in more trouble. So I just stammered and played it safe and said, no. Now, see, if I were basically good, I wouldn't have hesitated. I wouldn't have spent a single moment trying to either win favor or avoid punishment. My every word and thought would simply be aimed at presenting the truth with no thought for my personal comfort. But you know what? I am not basically good. When we were finished, he told me to have a good, safe night, to which I sincerely replied, "Thanks for doing what you do," as he headed back to his car. I eventually drove away sobered and effectively reprimanded and have since had time to think about the encounter. We may not like to use the word evil when describing our natural selfish tendencies, though I think it's a good fit personally, but I can't bring myself to say I'm basically good. I can't help but think that if we really were basically, which remember that word means fundamentally or primarily, if we were basically good, we wouldn't need near as many laws. Officer Thatcher, as I discovered his name to be on my ticket, would just be Mr. Thatcher in some other line of work. We probably wouldn't have lawyers and almost certainly not prisons. But we do. Not only are we not basically good, but we can't even live up to the legal standards that we've created for ourselves, let alone the moral standards set by God. Now, what's frightening about this is that when we are truly honest with ourselves, we can see that our performance is not good enough to satisfy an all-perfect God. If our value is based on performance, if our personal worth is based on how well we do and how well we behave, we are worthless or next to worthless. And even though a philosophy of performance equals personal worth has been etched into my brain somehow, this actually isn't the case in reality. We have, you and me, tremendous value that has nothing to do with our performance. Genesis 1:26 says, "Then God said, 'Let us make man in our image, in our likeness.'" That's a unique thing, man, that humankind is singled out. In some way, we reflect the character, the image, the likeness of God. And that gives us value we can't even comprehend, and we just take it for granted. And even though we are selfish and rebel and want nothing to do with God, our worth to Him still remains. Romans 5:8 says, "But God demonstrates His own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, while we were still rebelling and want nothing to do with God, Christ died for us." I'll be going to my traffic school class soon, and am oddly looking forward to it. I certainly knew that what I did was wrong, but there are more than a few rules of the road that I know I've forgotten, like who gets right-of-way at a four-way stop again, and is it ever okay to cross the solid white line, or does it have to be a dashed one? There's just going to be stuff that's going to be good for me to catch up on and refresh. So hopefully the class will also be a little, at least a little unpleasant, because you know what? I know who I am. Left to my own devices, my sense of goodness will fail me. It'll only hold out for so long, as I just demonstrated this week. But a swift kick in the butt and fear of the man can help keep some of my real basic nature in check.
Movie review.
Okay, clocking in at a mere 79 minutes, the movie Nine is no epic, but still creatively ambitious. It's marketed as not your little brother's... Excuse me, whew. Fighting off a burp there, and I lost. It's marketed as not your little brother's animated movie. So just who is this movie for? Well, hopefully you'll get an idea from this review. The story takes place on post-apocalyptic Earth. Mankind has destroyed itself, and only machines and nine mysteriously animated rag dolls remain. The dolls, named 1 through 9, struggle to survive as an evil, monstrous machine aims to hunt them down and kill them. Now, the movie is not graphic, but death is a common reality in this film. The advertising campaign and the PG-13 rating ought to be enough warning, but just in case, I'll let you know that this movie's probably not for most young kids, though tweens and early teen boys will likely enjoy it a lot. The visual look certainly contains some hallmarks of producer Tim Burton's early work, though not excessively. It's both grim and childlike, and the design of this world is captivating. Cast with celebrity voices like Elijah Wood, John C. Reilly, Jennifer Connelly, and Crispin Glover, you might expect the characters to really stand out, though the roles would have been likely serviced just as well with unknowns, I think. Plot and concept are the real stars of this movie, and they carry it pretty well. Though I could have used 10 more minutes of character development spread throughout the cast, would have been really nice and rounded out the movie. As it stands, the characters are not very fleshed out, leaving the movie not feeling empty, but it feels somewhat like a Twilight Zone episode or other short story where they just don't give the time to character development like that. The action is exciting and it's executed well. The bad guys are creepy, especially a strange snake with a doll's head kind of creature. Just see the movie, you'll know what I'm talking about. And, you know, they're hard to take your eyes off of all the bad guys. For most of the film, we're asked to simply accept that the dolls are alive somehow without knowing the reason, and though the plot doesn't continue asking the question of their origins, it's not really compelling. There's not a mystery that's compelling that you can tell they're trying to solve, but that mystery is explained at the end of the film. The plot is not complex, and the premise, you know, man versus machine equals end of the world, well, it's been seen a dozen times. So it's not a story that will stimulate the mind of a sci-fi geek, but it will likely spark the imagination of a preteen boy and be a movie he looks back on in adulthood the same way I might look back on, say, Dark Crystal or The Neverending Story. For parents and kids, themes of death and the human soul are both given springboards for conversation in this flick. The human soul in particular is ripe for discussion among viewers of all ages as you leave the theater. Keep an eye out for some discussion points on the nature of the human soul near the end of the movie. You'll also notice a visual cue just before the credits end, credits start, suggesting a sort of reincarnation concept with a touch of pantheism or monism. In other words, all are one, no individuality. Each piece is part of one whole. All is God, God is all, that kind of thing. It's probably not a movie that everyone will embrace, but a certain slice of the populace will find it scratches a very unique itch. Quality, it gets an 8.5 out of 10, and relevance, 7.5 out of 10.
I'm Matt York, and I'm a hero.
And I'm the Snarky Avenger, and I'm a superhero.
I fight demons and their earthly agents with my friends using only my military training and my faith.
I live in a secret base in a cave behind a waterfall, and I have a personal assistant and an AI computer.
Most people don't know who I am or what I do.
I'm famous, have lots of toys, and have superpowers like invulnerability and the power of Snark.
When it comes to most things, we're pretty different.
Yes, but no matter how much cooler being a superhero is than being a hero.
Hey.
I think what you do is cool, and I love to listen to your adventures in Archangel.
I love your show too, man. The interviews, the rants, and the reviews are great, in spite of the occasional heresy.
So there you have it, folks.
Whether you're a hero, a superhero, or just regular people,
we can all agree both Archangel and Snark Infested Waters are awesome podcasts that you should listen to. You can find Archangel at www.archangelnovel.com.
And you can find Snark Infested Waters at thesnarkyavenger.com.
Go check them out now. Hey man, you seem to have gotten the short end of the stick. Might want to find a new agent. You want my agent's number?
It's cool, man. God's got my back. But I would love a ride in the Snark Jet sometime.
Every word of God proves true. The grass withers and the flowers fade, but the word of our God stands forever.
Today we're searching for truth in the book of Acts, chapter 19, verses 21 through 41. We've just finished 1 Corinthians last week, and now we're going to take a little detour and look at Paul's life before we jump into 2 Corinthians. We pick up Paul's story again in Acts chapter 19. The year is about AD 53. Paul is in Ephesus, where he wrote 1 Corinthians. This is the middle of Paul's third missionary journey. Now, Paul's plan now is to go to Jerusalem, but to pass through Macedonia, as Paul mentioned in 1 Corinthians 16:5, and a Achaia, which together make up Greece. He's going to pass through there first. After visiting Greece, Paul wanted to visit Rome as well. Look at verse 21. While Paul finished up in Ephesus, he sent two helpers ahead of him to get the ball rolling. Timothy is mentioned to be heading this way in 1 Corinthians 16:10, you might remember. Now, trouble is brewing in Ephesus, possibly the trouble referenced in 1 Corinthians 16:9, involving the way, which was a term used to refer to Christianity during this time period. Look at verse 23. The temple of Artemis served as a bank in addition to being a religious building. Economics and religion were closely tied in Ephesus, since metal workers were paid to create idols and other items for religious purposes. Religious craftsmanship was a booming business, and it was being threatened by Paul's teaching against idol worship. Look at verses 25 through 28. Civic pride was also at stake, as the Ephesians loved their religion with a devotion similar to modern, I would say, patriotism. Notice that even their chant in verse 28 identifies their god with themselves. Great is Artemis of the Ephesians, right? A silversmith named Demetrius roused other craftsmen and eventually the whole city into a riot. Look at verses 24, 25, and 29. The Ephesians grabbed two of Paul's associates and took them to an open-air theater in the city, which seated about 25,000. We don't know if that was packed or not, but that was the capacity there. Paul wanted to go to the theater, but his disciples even city officials he had befriended begged him not to go. Look at verses 29 to 31. The Ephesians were completely out of control at this meeting, or this assembly. Some were simply caught up in the emotion with no real idea why they were at the theater. Look at verse 32. A man named Alexander was pushed to the front of the assembly for reasons that are unclear. However, as soon as the Ephesians realized he was a Jew, they denied him the right to speak and started chanting over him. Look at verses 33 to 34. This is probably because they knew that Judaism was also monotheistic and would likely frown on the polytheism and idol worship practiced in Ephesus. The chanting lasted for 2 hours, leaving no room for doubt that this was an extremely charged situation. Before the riot became completely unstoppable, the city clerk reasoned with those assembled, telling them to go through proper legal channels if and when they have been genuinely wronged by Paul or his associates. Look at verse 35 through 41. Now, after reading this chapter, there are a few good questions I think we can ask ourselves. Do I look at church as a place to make money or find business connections? Is my faith something that penetrates my heart, or does it only go as far as cultural identity and a sense of heritage? Am I quick to get up in arms about an issue before someone has actually wronged me? And these are all things that the Ephesians were kind of guilty of here. I want to be clear, though. Correcting these issues would not have made the Ephesians' false beliefs true, but I think there's still errors we can learn from and use to examine our own lives. All right, next week, Paul's continued travels and an introduction to 2 Corinthians. Now, for those that saw my post mentioning that we're going on to Romans next, that was originally planned, but recent material I've read more firmly places 2 Corinthians next chronologically, which I thought, you know, was the case, but then I read something that indicated otherwise, and now I'm back on track. Chronologically, the best evidence shows that 2 Corinthians came next, and then Romans after that. The coffeehouse question this week, do you feel free to exercise and express your religious beliefs in the place that you live? If no, in what way do you feel limited? And if yes, when do you take advantage of this freedom? Send me an email answering that question or just throwing any other thoughts or questions my way, paeter@spiritblade.net, or give me a call, 206-350-1226. Okay, I got an email last week I want to share with you guys from Mike L. He says, "Dear Pater, I found your podcast through the Archangel podcast novel, and I have to tell you that your podcast is awesome. I got all caps in the word awesome and 4 exclamation points. Woohoo!" He says, "Thank you so much for bringing news, reviews, and thoughts on the geek culture with a Christian perspective. I really appreciate you also for adding a study on God's Word in every podcast. I've downloaded all your episodes and am still trying to catch up. Great job. Keep up the good work. I plan to purchase the Spirit Blade series. I am trying to get my own fantasy graphic novel out, but I'm only in the beginning stages of writing the backstory and character development. Maybe we can chat about theology and stories in the future. I'd love to hear your comments. Peace. In his grips, Mike L. Thanks so much, Mike. I really appreciate that you're enjoying the show, and I hope you enjoy Spirit Blade and Dark Ritual as well. And yeah, I would totally dig chatting with you via email or, you know, whatever. We get some online chat or something, you know, on Facebook or something. That'd be really cool. Anybody else, if you ever want to chat about ideas you're kicking around, if you're kind of one of those artsy types, let me know if you want to kick around ideas, and I'm totally game for it. So anyway, thank you very much, Mike L. That's it for this week. As I said, next week, probably no podcast, but there is a possibility that there will be the first release from the Spirit Blade Underground Alliance for you guys to enjoy. And again, if you have suggestions on an alternate way for me to handle those features and where to put them online and stuff like that, please let me know. And lastly, I do want your questions and comments still for the next part of the Dark Ritual audio interactive, right? Audio commentary. Okay, that's it. I am beat. I got to get to bed early because my traffic class is in the morning. Woohoo! All right, that's it. You guys have a great week, and don't forget, in all things, seek the truth.
Visit www.spiritblade.net. Peter is a crazy freak. Green Lantern is awesome. Visit www.spiritblade.net.